Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Chris Lance. Chris is Vice President and General Manager at UNA, a group purchasing organization that provides the Sourcing Hero with its home. Chris joins me every month to tackle a current news story or topic of interest from his own point of view. So, hi, Chris. Thanks for being back for our March conversation.
Happy to be here. How are you doing, Kelly?
I am doing just fine. And there is no shortage of current topics we could potentially be talking about. But we settled on the Suez Canal. And I think it's interesting because certainly, especially in supply chain circles, it's been covered. But I actually kind of think we're at an interesting juncture where people are starting to like glaze over a little bit, but it is continuing. And so the Suez Canal, it's been like a literal supply chain battlefield for the last 6 or 8 months. We've got Houthis attacking ships trying to pass through in the Red Sea. I'm interested because you and I haven't talked about this at least after hitting the record button. What's your general reaction to what's going on in this part of the world and how we're seeing it affect global supply chains?
Well, I mean, my knee-jerk reaction, if we're just looking at that region, my knee-jerk reaction is the amount of lives lost since October.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're just in that region, and in my mind, I think I've said this on other, you know, less than great topics, right? But anytime you see things like this, I immediately think of the children, like how confused, how awful, especially there's no shortage of footage, I'll say from both sides, for lack of a better term, but it's just awful. But, you know, now you remove the emotion. What's my reaction? Well, I still kind of find myself shaking my head. And I hear this little voice saying, this is going to be so bad. Because for me, it's like, we're still scratching the tip. I think this is, it's still a pressure cooker right now. And what I mean by that is I think it would behoove everyone to just stop for a second and look at who is really involved. I mean, sometimes we're talking about countries or areas that your average American couldn't find on a map, but everybody knows Iran, China, Russia, and they're all connected is where I'm going with this, right? Just like the US is connected in its role in supplying or supporting other players. So I say all that to say, I'm just watching this grow and I'm sort of waiting for that shot heard round the world moment, you know, kind of like what's going to be the catalyst? Because like if and when this goes hot or something happens, I don't believe it's going to be contained to just that region. So I'm just kind of bracing, I guess, if you will.
Well, and the interesting thing is we never know exactly where it's going to happen, but we all know there's complexity, risk, disruption around every single corner. And I seem to remember a really smart guy. You may have met him. He's on this podcast once a month. And right at the end of last year, his big recommendation was that we all have a plan C for 2024. Not a good plan, not a plan B, but a plan C for when plans A and B inevitably go out the window. And it seems like you were right, because with the Suez Canal effectively out of commission right now, we're also seeing problems with traffic being throttled through the Panama Canal because of drought. And so in a lot of ways, these were each other's sort of plan B. Seems like we could all use a plan C right now. You follow the Panama Canal. What's sort of the latest that you've read about what's going on there?
So it's interesting. I'm a little bit, but not too much. But I say that because I don't think it means there's not anything going on. I think there's other focuses that would get more clicks or attention, right? Like you just said at the onset, there is a lot going on a daily basis. Now, I think the most recent headline that I saw, it said Panama Canal to increase daily transits to 27. It was like all bold, massive font. I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. And I clicked on it. And the increase was like from 24 to 27. like the daily transits. And so I'm like, oh, okay. So like that big sale, 50 cents off, right? So the latest charts overall that I'm seeing on like the maritime volume, specifically through the Panama Canal, though, it is not showing anything getting better. Not too much worse, but definitely not better. So that said, like I'm still expecting like heavy disruptions pretty deep into 2024 if we get any relief this year, because it's wild to say, but it's already March, right? So I think we'll be having issues deep into the summer, if not beyond, just specifically on this.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because even in preparation for us having this conversation, I think of myself as somebody that follows the news generally, and of course, supply chain specific news very closely. But there were some things that have happened in the last couple of weeks that I don't feel like received the appropriate coverage or the right level of coverage. One is that in early March, the Houthis managed to sink their first ship. So they took down the Ruby Mar, which is a British ship. And obviously taking down a ship is a bad thing. It's an escalation. It certainly raises concerns, but it also poses an environmental threat to the area where the ship went down. Mm-hmm. How do you find yourself responding to examples of escalation like this?
So when I first read about that ship going down, and for the audience here, the environmental catastrophe, there was like 21,000 metric tons of ammonium phosphate that went into the sea when it sank. So perhaps this is a little crass, but like the first thing I thought was, well, where's Greta Thunberg and the people sitting in traffic on climate change on this one? Because I'm like, holy smokes, like that's a lot.
That is not good.
Not at all. But really, though, what it shows me is that like this is not a game. This isn't posturing. We've talked about close calls, but we're now officially talking about active rockets and missiles hitting ships simply because of the flag that's displayed on it. So it goes back to what I said not too long ago, where it's what's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back? Like which shot is going to be the shot? There's a lot of big issues going on in this region, and they're so big and so frequent, it almost seems like we just kind of paper over them. But yeah, I'm glad you called this out, because I don't think a lot of people realize that his ship didn't just sink. Like there's ripple effects to all of these things. So
absolutely, and to your point about this not being a game, this is extremely real. If it's surprising that the sinking of the Ruby Mar and the potential environmental catastrophe that could go along with it didn't make headlines, how's this for a shock? Mm-hmm. On March 6th, the Houthis managed to kill crew members. So they attacked the merchant vessel True Confidence, which is a Liberian-owned bulk carrier. They killed 3 crew members on the ship and 4 other people were injured. So now we have a situation, you know, to the question about what is it going to be that's really going to elevate this to people's awareness, apparently it's not loss of human life, right? Because that didn't get covered. So now we have people dying to make our supply chains work. And you and I talk about geopolitics a lot, you know, being aware of it. What role does it play in our everyday job? When we start to lose lives, how can we both continue doing our jobs, because we need to do that, but also process the increased level of geopolitical entanglement so we're sort of making decisions in the appropriate context?
Well, I think processing is the right word. I'll come back to that in a second. It's heavy. It's really heavy. Because when you put it in that context, as you should, it's like lives are being lost to make sure supply chains work. Like it's just a lot to take in. So I guess for me, it's what I would say to everybody listening, specifically in the States, but admittedly, I think 60% of the globe has elections this year, right? Later in the year, when people are heading to the polls, I would just say, please consider your candidate's views on manufacturing. Consider your candidate's views on foreign relations policies as really, really strong topics. Because I, from my view, and it's just a limited view, right? But I would argue that the U.S. is still strong, smart, capable enough, and with resources where we can bring more things back stateside and limit our risk or our exposure. I just, for me, oil and retail ships being fired upon on the other side of the world kind of feels like it can be avoided with some meaningful changes. But what I was touching on before is when I say, like, I really would recommend, it's going to sound really cold, but I would recommend kind of coming to terms with things like this and learning how to process it, honestly, because, you know, like you and I have hinted at on other topics, we've heard numerous people in positions of power and with more information than us saying that war is inevitable. And so to me, well, war and supply chains are, they're heavily attacked.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like wisdom, right? Whether you read The Art of War, things like that, but what that means is devastation for the average person. So sadly, very sadly, I actually think more of this is going to happen before anything starts to calm down. So I don't want to say be comfortable with it. My goodness, no, don't be comfortable with the loss of life, but be comfortable with or be able to understand how intense these things are getting and that each response in and of itself is an escalation. So what could be next? You know, that's kind of my take, my thought.
And know what's happening. I mean, I felt horrible when I found out, I don't know, let's say 10 days after this happened, right? Because I was getting ready for us to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. We had already more or less decided on this topic. I'm trying to make sure I've sort of got the latest. You know, every once in a while, you might see an image go by where you mentally say, okay, something new in the Red Sea, or at the very least, nothing's materially changed in the Red Sea and Suez Canal. But I almost felt a sense of guilt. You know, yes, it is happening far away, but for all we know, I mean, this ship may have been carrying oil that's coming here, grain that's going to Europe. You know, these bulk carriers are moving things around the world that, whether they're coming directly to us or not, are in our supply chains. And to think that people lost their lives, yes, I'm sure it's considered a higher than average risk job to work upon a merchant vessel. I'm sure it's riskier than my job, Chris. I have a feeling it's riskier than your job, right? Nope. So there's some amount of risk tolerance that's going on. Mm-hmm. But reading the story and thinking, three people just trying to get stuff from point A to point B are gone because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. I think, you know, and this sort of leads to the last thing I want to get a chance to talk about with you, you know, is this: to be a normal person, to read the news and to think, okay, I can't personally go there and help. Mm-hmm. I don't have anyone's ear where I can say, hey, we need to change things. This is a very real concern. I thought you did an excellent job in the second edition of your newsletter. We actually talked about this in February. You started writing a monthly newsletter where you take kind of the same sorts of stories that we would talk about here, but a whole mix of content, political cartoons, social media stuff, book reviews, kind of pull it all together. And you did a really effective job talking about the small, medium, and then large global disruptions that could occur as a result of the attacks like the ones we're talking about in the Red Sea leading to the Suez Canal. Are average people around the world maybe about to be called up to be the heroes? You know, we always ask people on the show, like, you know, what does the idea of a sourcing hero mean to you?
Right.
What does heroism look like in a business context? Even to process that moving something around could lead to unnecessary death. Mm-hmm. Is this sort of like a little flag on the horizon that we're all about to get called back up to be heroic in some capacity?
Ooh, so you said a lot there, but yes, an emphatic yes, absolutely, that's my view, right? So the importance of supply chain extends beyond procurement and sourcing, like as a career or a job, however you want to call it, right? When you boil it down to, like, what is procurement and sourcing? What is supply chain? We're talking about the real availability of goods and services. And so what that is we're talking about the availability of goods and services on a personal level too. It's just not, did the company get their product, right? It's like, did your grocery store get the food that you need to feed your family? So I would ask it this way. Do you know any heroes who found baby formula or diapers a couple years ago? Do we know any heroes who found masks when that was a mandate?
True.
I absolutely think that personally and businesses, people are going to have to rise to the occasion, I guess, if you will. Because again, I think things are going to continue to escalate. So the impact of warfare or even just tensions has always, like in history, it's always been devastating to supply chains. And so sadly, I think most people, especially in the US, they tend to wait for something to be at their doorstep to take action. And so if you take a step back, though, and you look at the last 4 years, it's kind of a naive outlook to have at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I'll say, I'll end it with this, is bold, but nobody is coming to save you, and failing to plan is planning to fail. So if you know any of those heroes, what made them the hero? Did they have foresight? Was it they planned ahead? Were they in the right place at the right time? How did they create their own luck? How did they become heroes? And then again, listening to the topics that we're talking about, Kelly, and then again, just looking down the road. So
awesome. I mean, I think that's a great point of view. And it's funny because you talk about sort of supplying our own homes during COVID. I think there's even a heroism in getting to the store and resisting the panic, right? You get there, there's two boxes of masks. Do you really need the two? Can you take one and maybe you make somebody else's day because one is still on the shelf? Mm-hmm. There are so many different ways to be a hero personally and in a supply context. They don't all involve sort of figuratively running into burning buildings. Sometimes it's about just staying calm and keeping the bigger picture perspective in mind. And I think we're going to need a lot of calm as we go through 2024. Let's keep our heads on straight, right? Mm-hmm. Now, as we start to wind down, I want to make sure how people know they can connect with you. And there's a lot of different resources they can access. So if people are meeting you through this conversation, one of the things I always do is I link to a few past episodes down below in the show notes. So if you enjoyed this, scroll down. I promise there's other great listening down there you can directly connect to. But Chris, whether it's you, whether it's Una, whether it's your newsletter, what are some other steps that people can take if they would like to get connected and get some more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to know more about the team or like, okay, you guys, good topic. What do you do though? If you go to una.com, una.com, there's a wealth of information out there about what we actually do. And then if you go to the resources up at the top, there's a wealth of information. You can find my newsletter out there. And then if you go to About Us, you can obviously see me and get in touch with me that way. Alternatively, I'm on LinkedIn. It's just Chris with a K, K-R-I-S, Lance on LinkedIn. Or you could just email me. It's Chris, K-R-I-S, at una.com.
Excellent. Well, Chris, another great monthly conversation. Mm. I will look forward to doing it again on a different topic in April.
Yeah, sounds good. Talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero Podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.